From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. State regulators voted to allow higher levels of about 20 toxins into Florida's waterways, and some of them are known to cause cancer. The Florida Department of Environmental Protection has not updated these levels since the 1990s. The agency went ahead with this move, even though a lot of Floridians are against it. We'll talk with the former Assistant Bureau Chief of Surface Water Management within the DEP, the Miami Herald Tallahassee Bureau Chief who's covering this issue, and the Florida Chapter President of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Also, Florida State University is emerging as a player in the nation's struggle to clean up Cold War-era nuclear waste sites. That's because the university recently received a $10 million grant from the Department of Energy to create an Energy Frontier Research Center. We'll talk about the center, its mission, and Florida State University's history as a staple for nuclear chemistry research. That's ahead. First, this news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges. Florida State University is helping out in the nation's mission to clean up Cold War-era weapon production sites. That's because the university recently received a $10 million grant from the Department of Energy to create an Energy Frontier Research Center. The new center's goal is to speed up research that would help clean up these sites. It will look at solutions, including recycling used nuclear materials. The grant fits in line with Florida State University's history as an institution for nuclear chemistry research. Joining us to talk about the new center and its mission is Tom Albrecht-Schmidt. He's a professor and director of the new center at Florida State University. Tom, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Mark Gilbertson with the Department of Energy. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So, Mark, you're in the Energy Department's Environmental Management Office. So let's start with the problem. What is this grant supposed to be helping?
So the environmental management program has been in place for 27 years, and we spent over $100 billion in trying to clean up the legacy of the Cold War for nuclear weapons production. And so why this grant is important to us is although we've done a lot of work over those 27 years, we've got about 50 years of work left to go and about $200 billion worth of activity that we need to tackle. And so this grant hopefully will help to lay the scientific foundation for improvements to make that cleanup effort more cost effective.
And before we dig into what will be happening at FSU, were there other grants and programs that were awarded in the cycle as part of this program?
Yeah, we had a couple of additional grants that were awarded in the effort, and those went to other institutions that are working on other facets of the problem. One went to the PNNL organization, Pacific Northwest National Laboratory up in Washington. One of them was awarded to the Ohio State University, and an additional one was awarded to the University of South Carolina.
And what will they be looking at in terms of, you know, addressing this problem of these sites?
Yeah, so what the major kind of issues or thrusts of these awards are is the materials that we have that we're trying to disposition are a radioactive mixture of materials that are in tanks. And so those materials that are in tanks, we need to put in stable waste forms for the long term, for future generations. And each of these individual institutions is tackling a different kind of facet about how we create new waste forms, how we characterize the waste that goes into waste forms, how those waste forms might perform better going into the future. And so that's the nature of this particular call.
Getting them out of the tanks and securing them better or trying
So what we have is we have millions of gallons of waste in tanks at the Savannah River site in South Carolina and the Hanford site in Washington. And so what we do is we take this mixture of materials that in tanks that were constructed in the 50s and 60s, and we're withdrawing the material from those tanks and treating that material to put it into a more stable waste form. And the current technology is putting it in a glass waste form or a cementitious material, but we hope that with these grants working on new materials and new methods to capture these radioactive wastes, that we might create or have them work on ways to create new waste forms that will perform better for future generations.
And so these tanks that are just sitting there, what are the conditions of them now? You know, how, what's sort of the scope of this project? What are the conditions of the tanks that they're currently sitting in?
So the tanks have been there for several decades. They're carbon steel tanks. We monitor them regularly. We adjust the pH and things to make sure that they don't corrode. And so we're monitoring them. We manage materials that are in them. We evaporate some of the liquids that are in them. We transfer them from older style tanks to newer style tanks. So those are some of the kind of activities that we're doing with these materials. At the Savannah River site, we pump some of the materials out, and we're vitrifying that waste right now. And we're putting it into glass.
Where are these two sites?
It's the Savannah River site in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and the Hanford site in Washington.
Okay. And so they have two different how much waste is there right now? You said millions of gallons?
Yeah. So at Hanford, we have 177 tanks. And in those, we have about 56 million gallons of waste that are in those tanks. Of those tanks in Hanford, 149 of those are single-shell tanks, and 28 of them are double-shell tanks, meaning they've got a tank within a tank. We're transferring materials from the singles. We removed the liquids from the single-shell tanks. We're transferring sludges from the single-shell tanks to the double-shell tanks at Hanford, and we'll eventually, we're building a waste treatment facility up in Hanford that will eventually vitrify those materials.
What does vitrify mean?
Make it into glass, glass waste form.
Interesting.
At the Savannah River site, we have 45 tanks that are 36 million gallons of high-level waste material. So they're carbon steel underground tanks. And since 1996, we've been removing waste from those tanks, and we've made 15 million pounds of glass down at Savannah River.
What do you do with the glass?
So the glass right now is in interim storage on site, and then eventually through processes with consent-based siting, we hope to site a high-level waste repository where we can disposition those materials in the future.
Okay. Do you have questions about nuclear cleanup? You can join the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. Tom with FSU, I want to transition the conversation to you. Why is there a need to clean up these kinds of sites? What are sort of the hazards or risks that would necessitate this cleanup program?
Well, there are several. The first is that, you know, the 177 tanks that were just mentioned, as I've told many people, when you ask, are they acidic, are they basic, are they oxidizing, are they reducing, is it mostly liquid, is it mostly sludge, the answer to all of those questions is just yes. It's the most complicated waste that anybody could imagine. And so, you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all model that one can use for treating each of these tanks. So the vitrification process is really a superb way of dealing with fission products, for example. So you at Fukushima, for example, you heard about strontium and cesium leaching into the environment. Vitrified waste is a really good way of capturing those kinds of radionuclides. But it is not necessarily the best way of capturing all of them. And so at Savannah River, for example, some of the additional waste goes into what's called salt stone, which is basically these cement blocks. But again, the reason why this center has been funded is we're looking at developing even more targeted waveforms, ones that capture specific radionuclides in much more advanced sorts of materials for long-term storage.
And how old are these two sites?
Well, the Hanford site goes all the way back to the 1940s. So that was the first site where we did large-scale production of plutonium. It's actually a National Historic Site, and I think a few times a year you can take a bus tour over to what's called the graphite reactor and see where the United States, at least at a large scale, manufactured plutonium. The Savannah River site was a little bit later. It came about really towards the mid-1950s, and this is when we really thought we needed multiple locations for preparing plutonium in the event of a nuclear war. So the concern was if they hit Hanford, we would have a backup site. And in fact, if you go to Savannah River, there are five reactors on that site spread out over 300 square miles. And the original model was that if one reactor was hit with a nuclear bomb, then the other reactors would survive. So these are really huge, huge sites. It's difficult to see the scale of these unless you see aerial photos. And actually, there's a highway that goes through the Savannah River site. You can't exit, obviously, but that gives you an idea of how big these operations are.
Can you give us sort of a snapshot in time as to, you know, what was happening in the country or why these sites were built or, you know, the era in which they were built?
Sure. So the Hanford site goes to World War II. So, you know, originally, the bombs were being developed for dealing with Germany, and of course, that issue was solved without nuclear weapons. But the plutonium that ultimately was dropped on Nagasaki came from the Hanford site. So that's a World War II era site, although it continued operation into the 80s. Savannah River site would have really been the Cold War, although Hanford coexisted at the same time, and so that's really for dealing with the threat of Russia. And what we have to remember, and, you know, I'm probably the, you know, last generation that remembers this, is we considered that threat of nuclear war to be very real. And I remember when I was living in California having to do bomb drills, you know, where we would dive under our desks with a certain sort of alarm in the school. And so, you know, it's a different era and a different mindset. And, you know, we have the legacy of that era to clean up.
Yeah, and Mark, you mentioned that I think you said you've done about 25 years of cleanup so far. What was happening around that time that initiated the cleanup?
So the cleanup was initiated at the end of the Cold War, back in the Reagan years. And so in that particular time frame, we, you know, the relationships with Russia, you know, unfroze, and we no longer needed to produce the weapons that we once did, and so now we're in a state in the country where we're essentially just maintaining a stockpile and not creating new weapons.
And now we have this, you know, and we talk about cleaning up Cold War era sites, you know, is this stuff that was produced, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and it's just been kind of sitting around, we've been trying to figure out what to do with it ever since?
So we've been, as we said, for the last 25 years, we've been managing the cleanup of the sites. And, you know, the EM program started out with over 100 sites across the country that we were cleaning up. And now we're down to just a couple of handfuls, like 14 sites across the country that we're doing work at. But they're the tough ones, like the Hanfords and the Savannah Rivers that are left.
EM is environmental management?
Yes, environmental management.
Were there any in Florida that you looked at?
So originally we had a site that was a manufacturing facility over by Pinellas, but it was not anywhere near the production kind of work that was done there. It was mainly assembling things, and so it was cleaned up relatively early in the program.
Do you have questions about FSU's research into nuclear waste cleanup? You can join the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. So let's focus a little bit on FSU. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Tom, FSU has a bit of a history with, nuclear chemistry and working on nuclear chemistry. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So, yeah, it probably has the second longest legacy in the U.S., probably right after Berkeley, which is where all of this started. FSU probably comes second. And in the early 1950s, when the PhD programs were established at FSU, primarily as a result of its conversion from Florida Women's College to Florida State University, there was a governor at the time that loved all things nuclear. And so he invested very heavily in nuclear physics, and he invested very heavily in nuclear chemistry here on our campus. And as a matter of fact, the road that goes between chemistry and physics is called Atomic Way. And until recently, at each end of that road, there was a coffee shop called Atomic Coffee. And their cups are kind of cool because they say saving mankind one cup at a time with a big nuclear symbol middle of them. So it's a real special place to do work on radioactive elements, and we do many, many different things. So in the 50s, they brought in two different nuclear chemists, but the second one, Greg Chopin, really built a significant empire here at FSU. And for probably five decades, if you wanted to come to a university and work on the chemistry of something like plutonium, it was really the only game in town. You could go to Berkeley, but that meant going up the hill to Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, but actually doing on a campus, we were really the only place you could do that. And so when Greg retired, a chaired position called the Gregory R. Chopin Chair in Chemistry was established, and they brought me in to continue that tradition that Greg had established.
A little bit of legacy I didn't know about FSU. So what will you be doing with this center? What will you be focusing on?
So we actually went with a fairly broad approach. I believe the best way to solve intractable or seemingly intractable problems is through cross-fertilization of disciplines. And so we have chemists, we have condensed matter physicists, we have material scientists, all in the center, along with theoreticians. And we're really doing three different approaches. So one of the approaches, which will primarily be centered here in the chemistry department at FSU, is looking at low-temperature waste forms that trap just one radionuclide. And so one of the more challenging ones for the Department of Energy is something called technetium, which is the lightest element in the periodic table that has no stable isotopes. It's right in the middle of the transition metals. And we've already developed a material that will selectively grab technetium out of the waste streams that are produced when you vitrify waste at the Savannah River site. And this material really needs to be optimized and enhanced and ultimately commercialized. And so that we're going to really hit the ground running on. We're also developing, in collaboration with the National Highfield Magnet Laboratory, what are called high-temperature waste forms. So these waste forms are more tailored for things like uranium and plutonium. They are for long-term storage of nuclear materials. And then the final aspect of the program is looking at ways of selectively extracting things like plutonium, for example, from tank waste, really as a method of recycling and perhaps gaining back that plutonium for use in energy production. And so what we've, in order to really merge those themes together, we have a group of theoreticians both here at FSU and at Los Alamos National Laboratory that will create the models that we need to bridge between these seemingly divergent areas. And then one of the areas previously mentioned is that we really need further advances in how you characterize these waste forms and characterize the materials in the tanks. And so there's also a significant component of people that are going to go out to large basic energy sciences user facilities and really develop the most advanced techniques for gaining a really deep understanding of these compounds that will hopefully...
Characterizing means what exactly?
Excuse me?
Characterizing means what exactly? When you say characterize.
So when you embed, say, plutonium in a crystalline matrix, which is what one would want to do, you want to understand how the plutonium is interacting with the matrix. And so we call those chemical bonds. And so if the plutonium is forming really strong bonds with that matrix, that's a really good harbinger that you're going to have a material that's stable in the long term, or at least it's one of the pieces of the puzzle that you need to solve. And the question is, how do you even probe the nature of the interaction between plutonium and a matrix? And that historically has been very difficult to do, and really just in the last decade have we brought techniques online that gave us a really deep, deep understanding of those sorts of interactions and allow you to, you know, once you understand them, then you can optimize them. And so that's why we're talking about creating more advanced materials, is that with these better characterization methods and a deeper understanding of the fundamentals, we should be able to create better materials. And that's really what when they talk about use-inspired basic research, which is what basic energy sciences supports at the Department of Energy, that's what they're talking about, is understanding the fundamentals that ultimately leads to an improved process.
So that's the idea, that we have these set, you know, I'm not a nuclear chemist, but we have these set elements that we're working with inside of this tank, and it's one thing to be able to get them out, which is what you're trying to do, and then it's also figuring out the perfect, you know, in a simplistic terms, equation to make them stable or stay or store well, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect way of describing it, is that, you know, there have been many materials proposed over the decades that this research has taken place that, when they've been really carefully examined, really haven't lived up to expectations. And the question is why? Because they wouldn't have investigated those materials if they didn't show promise. So there were certain aspects that looked very promising, and then something else caused that material to not live up. And so what we're really trying to do is understand the basics, you know, all of the fundamentals of the nature of the interaction between really heavy elements and the things that we want to put them in, so that we can avoid, you know, materials not performing, you know, optimally.
And we don't have a lot of time left, but could you tell me a little bit about the idea of recycling nuclear materials? Is that a relatively new idea? Is it being done right now?
It's a very old idea. It actually dates all the way back to the 1950s. So, you know, I tell people that you know, nuclear is a double-edged sword. Of course, it saves millions of people's lives through medicine, and the same technology that they use to extract plutonium to make nuclear weapons can be used to extract plutonium to make nuclear fuel for generating electricity, which is probably the highest density form of energy that you can get that has a very low carbon footprint. And so I view this plutonium waste as really a resource. And the technology for doing that was developed in the United States in the 50s. In the 70s, to a certain degree, it was abandoned for political reasons, but all other advanced nuclear nations have continued with that. So France especially has led the way in having a very heavy component of their energy mix be nuclear, and they very seriously recycle their used nuclear fuel.
And Mark, why did the Department of Energy select FSU to participate in the part of this program?
So we had a broad competition in which we got dozens of institutions that provided ideas to us, and we selected the Florida State University because of the quality of the partnership that they put forward and because of the innovative nature of the ideas that they put on the table. So,
and when they store, you know, you're talking about turning it into glass. When you extract those elements, does it all get turned into glass, or are there other ways that you store this material?
Well, as was discussed, part of our waste down at Savannah River goes into cementitious material, the low-activity waste, and it's the high-activity waste that we put into a glass waste form there. But perhaps there are better ways to do it as we go into the future, and that's what the center is kind of charged with, is how do we more effectively get materials into waste forms. For example, down at Savannah River right now, only 5% of the technetium has been treated thus far, and so we've got a lot more that we need to stabilize, and this work will help us to do that in a more efficient manner.
More work to be done. Well, that's all the time we have for the show. Thank you, Tom and Mark. Tom Albrecht-Schmidt is director of the Center for Actinide Science and Technology at Florida State University. And Mark Gilbertson is the senior laboratory policy officer in the Department of Energy's Office of Environmental Management. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Information about the nation's mission to clean up Cold War-era weapon production sites and about our earlier segment on Florida allowing higher levels of about 20 toxins into its waterways is online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation online on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui and AJ Leonard. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. I'm Topher Forges. Have a good afternoon.